Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
German police proved beyond reasonable doubt by bursting in and interrupting the live stream, grabbing the microphone, ending that magnificent Congress, that fascism does not need to win government in order to be in power.
As the official death toll in Gaza nears 34,000, Germany's intensifying its crackdown on pro-Palestinian voices. On Friday, Berlin police raided and shut down a three-day Palestine Congress just minutes after it began. We'll speak with former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis, who was barred from entering Germany and banned from addressing the conference, which his organization, DiEM25, helped organize. Then we'll talk to Palestinian journalist Dalia Hotouka, who says Western media coverage of Israel's war in Gaza has helped Israel avoid growing calls for a ceasefire.
This could not have been achieved without the complicity, unfortunately, of Western journalists across Europe and the U.S. who have manufactured consent for their government's unconditional support of Israel by uncritically parroting Israeli military disinformation and outright propaganda.
We'll also talk to Dalia Hotouka about increasing settler violence in the occupied West Bank. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. An Israeli airstrike destroyed a mosque and homes in Gaza's northern Jabalia refugee camp. Many were reported injured, including children. Another attack on the Nusayrat refugee camp killed at least three people. In Rafah, grieving family members at the Al-Najjar hospital said their final goodbyes today to loved ones who were killed in an overnight Israeli airstrike. This is a Palestinian mother, Umrami Shabbat.
I lost my feelings. I lost my feelings. I don't have feelings anymore. Do I have feelings still? I'm going crazy. They should put me with my son. My son was very dear to me. He had five daughters and a son. His son is only 1 year old. He brought them to me for Eid, to sleep over, and they left, as if he was saying goodbye to them. This boy is attached to his father.
On Monday, doctors uncovered a new mass grave at the decimated Al-Shifa hospital. The bodies clearly belonged to patients, as some still had medical bandages and catheters attached to their dead bodies. Hundreds of bodies have been recovered from the Gaza City hospital grounds since Israeli troops ended their deadly siege April 1st. Attacks on health facilities, medical staff, and patients are considered war crimes and crimes against humanity. In news from occupied East Jerusalem, an Israeli court ordered the forced removal of three Palestinian families from their homes in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. The families have lived in their homes for more than half a century and have been battling attempts by Israeli settlers to evict them since 2009. Tensions remain high throughout the region amid reports an Israeli response to Iran's weekend attack could be imminent. Iran warned Israel against launching any further military action 2 weeks after an Israeli attack killed at least two Iranian generals at its consulate in Damascus, Syria. This is Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian.
If the Israeli regime makes a mistake, this time Iran's response, as Iran's military commanders announced, will not be minimal, but immediate and severe.
UN legal experts say the Israeli attack violated international law. Meanwhile, the U.S. is reportedly preparing new sanctions against Iran. Activists across the globe carried out large-scale actions Monday as part of A15, a coordinated economic blockade in solidarity with Palestine. Here in the United States, organizers blockaded factories and corporate offices of weapons manufacturers, including the Boeing plant in St. Charles, Missouri, Pratt & Whitney in Middletown, Connecticut, and the Lockheed Martin building in Arlington, Virginia. Protesters took over major roads in Philadelphia and Oakland, while others rallied in front of government buildings and cultural sites. In San Francisco, activists shut down both sides of the Golden Gate Bridge in a major traffic disruption in the Bay Area. Here in New York, activists marched across the Brooklyn Bridge and rallied on both the Brooklyn and Manhattan sides of the iconic bridge. Dozens of people were arrested in the peaceful action, including reporters covering the protest. Protests continue as well on U.S. college campuses. A group of Yale graduate students launched a hunger strike Friday to demand Yale divest from companies arming Israel. Meanwhile, the University of Southern California, USC, has come under fire for canceling the commencement speech of the valedictorian Asna Tabassum for what the school claimed were safety reasons after she became the subject of an online anti-Palestinian hate campaign. Asna said, quote, "I am both shocked by this decision and profoundly disappointed that the university is succumbing to a campaign of hate meant to silence my voice," she said. In other news from New York, jury selection for Donald Trump's criminal hush money trial is entering its second day. The jury selection process could take up to 2 weeks. No jurors were chosen Monday. Dozens of potential jurors were dismissed after saying they could not be impartial in what's the first ever criminal prosecution of a U.S. president. Trump's charged with 34 felony counts of falsifying business records to hide a $130,000 payment to adult film star Stormy Daniels in 2016. He could be sentenced to 4 years in prison if convicted. Trump's required to attend all the proceedings of this trial. The judge overseeing the case, New York Supreme Court Justice Juan Merchan, told Trump if he fails to show up, quote, "there will be an arrest," unquote. The judge also threatened jail if Trump disrupted the trial. In Virginia, three Iraqi survivors of torture by U.S. guards at the notorious Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq headed to federal court Monday for the start of a much-anticipated trial against U.S. military contractor CACI, which was hired to provide interrogation services at Abu Ghraib. The lawsuit was first filed by the Center for Constitutional Rights in 2008. Since then, CACI repeatedly attempted to have the case dismissed. Plaintiffs Suhail al-Shamari, Saad Zubai, and Salah El-Alajil accused CACI of conspiring to commit war crimes at Abu Ghraib. The three were subjected to sexual abuse, electric shocks, exposed to extreme temperatures, and death threats by their interrogators. Heavy rains and lightning in Pakistan have killed at least 50 people. Afghan authorities also reported at least 50 deaths due to rain and flooding in recent days as thousands have had to flee their homes. In 2022, UN Chief Antonio Guterres called the worsening annual weather events in the region monsoon on steroids as the climate crisis increases their frequency and intensity. Elsewhere, large swaths of northern Kazakhstan and Russia's Urals region have been inundated, forcing more than 125,000 people to evacuate as large snowfalls and heavy rains swell the tributaries of the Ob River. Back in the U.S., the National Ocean and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, confirmed Monday the world's fourth global coral bleaching event is underway due to global heating.
Significant severe coral bleaching has been reported in at least 54 countries and territories around the globe since February 2023. So it's spatially extensive, occurring, again, in all ocean basins across multiple countries.
In Baltimore, Maryland, salvage crews found the body of a fourth victim of last month's Francis Scott Key Bridge collapse, which killed six construction workers. Two other bodies remain missing. This comes as the FBI launched a criminal investigation into the tragedy. The agency is reportedly looking into whether crew on board the massive cargo ship that struck the bridge were aware the vessel had serious electrical problems. In New Mexico, a judge sentenced Hannah Gutierrez Reed, the weapons handler on the film Rust, to the maximum sentence of 18 months in prison for the involuntary manslaughter of cinematographer Helena Hutchins. Alec Baldwin, the star and producer of Rust, fired the loaded prop gun that killed Hutchins and injured director Joel Souza during a rehearsal in 2022. Alec Baldwin will face his own manslaughter trial in July. Civil rights groups warn the First Amendment right to protest could be in peril after the U.S. Supreme Court rejected a key case brought by Black Lives Matter organizer DeRay McKesson. McKesson led a Black Lives Matter protest in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, following the police killing of Alton Sterling in 2016. A police officer was injured at the protest, triggering a lawsuit against McKesson, even though he himself did not injure the officer. The ruling against McKesson by the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals could threaten organizers of any mass protest in Louisiana, Mississippi, or Texas. In other Supreme Court news, Justice Clarence Thomas was absent from the bench Monday without explanation and did not participate in remote arguments. At 75, Justice Thomas is the oldest and longest-serving member of the Supreme Court. And the pioneering Black multimedia artist, activist and author Faith Ringgold has died at the age of 93. Ringgold is best known for her vibrant quilts depicting African-American communities, especially in her native New York, and political messages. She spoke out against racism, Eurocentrism and patriarchy in the art establishment and became a champion for other Black women artists. She famously said, quote, "I just decided when someone says you can't do something, do more of it," she said. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
As the official death toll in Gaza nears 34,000, we begin today's show looking at Germany's intensifying crackdown on pro-Palestinian voices. On Friday, police in Berlin shut down a three-day Palestinian conference just moments after it began. In addition, Germany's interior ministry banned several speakers from even entering Germany or addressing the Palestine Congress conference remotely. The Palestinian researcher Salman Abu Sitta opened the conference, but his remarks over a live stream were cut short when Berlin police raided the conference site.
We have never seen before these daily scenes, one massacre after another, homes demolished over the heads of the occupants, bodies pulled from under the rubble, surviving child with all his family killed. We have never seen before people deliberately denied food and water, children starved to death and killed when rushing to get food. We have never seen before all means of life systematically destroyed, hospitals, clinics, schools, universities, libraries, ancient monuments, mosques, churches, universities, cemeteries, bakeries, apartment buildings.
We ask you, so for all people in the live stream, the police is standing right in front of us and they ask us to stop the video.
They're even trying to take away this microphone.
That was a live stream capturing the moment when German police raided and shut down the Palestine Congress conference in Berlin just minutes after it began. On Friday, German authorities also detained and questioned the Palestinian-British surgeon, Dr. Hassan Abu Sitta, who had flown into Germany to speak at the Palestine Congress. Dr. Abu Sitta, who is the nephew of Salman Abu Sitta, who we just watched interrupted, spoke to Middle East Eye after he was barred entry.
Upon arrival, I was stopped at the passport office. I was then escorted down to the basement of the airport, where I was questioned for around 3.5 hours. At the end of 3.5 hours, I was told that I will not be allowed to enter German soil, that I will, and that this ban will last the whole of April, and not just that, that if I were to try to link up my Zoom or FaceTime with the conference, even if I was outside Germany, or I were to send a video of my lecture to the conference in Berlin, then That would constitute a breach of German law, and that I would endanger myself to having a fine or even up to a year of prison.
That was the Palestinian British surgeon, Dr. Hassan Abusita, who had flown into Germany to speak at the Palestine Congress, but was denied entry to Germany. German authorities defended the decision to shut down the Palestinian conference, citing German laws against so-called hate speech. When Dr. Abusita came out of Gaza, we interviewed him, and you can go to democracynow.org to see that conversation. We're joined right now by former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis. He was also banned from entering Germany and barred from engaging in any political activity there. Varoufakis is a leader of the pan-European progressive movement, DiEM25, which helped organize the Palestine Congress. Welcome to Democracy Now! Yanis Varoufakis is the former finance minister of Greece. His most recent book is Techno-Feudalism. What Killed Capitalism is the subtitle. Yanis Varoufakis, can you explain what happened in Berlin?
To give you a vignette, Amy, of the absurdity, which would have been funny if it wasn't so tragic of what went on. During the morning, just before the police burst in, as you described so accurately, there was a young man who, an attendee of the Congress, a member of the Jewish Voice for Peace, which together with the Merit 25, DiEM25, we will co-organize the Palestine Congress. And this young man, as he approached the police court, and there were 2,500 policemen preventing our attendees from attending the Congress. Anyway, he was approaching and he had a little placard that he had written with his own hand, and it read, Jews Against Genocide. And for that, he was apprehended, arrested, manhandled. And while the police were manhandling him, he turned around humorfully or half-jokingly and said to them, would it have been all right with you if it said Jews in favor of genocide? At which point, of course, they were far more angered and manhandled him even more fiercely. I'm conveying this to you, Amy, and to our listeners and viewers, because this shows the absurdity of the whole thing. The police entered the building, the venue, a few minutes before I was due to deliver my talk via video link. As a result, what I did was I recorded my talk and I posted it online from Greece, from Athens, where I'm even now. And the next day, I found out that a ban, as you put it, was slapped on me by the German authorities. A ban that harks back to laws against Nazis and a law that has only been used recently for ISIS operatives. That was used against me. Allow me just to briefly say that the rationale behind this is the Germans start raison, the logic or rationale of this German state to protect Jews, which is an excellent rationale. I wish every state had it, each one of us had it, to protect Jews, except that this is not about protecting Jewish lives and Jews from anti-Semitism. It's all about protecting the right of Israel to commit any war crime of its choice in the final analysis.
And Yanis Varoufakis, the federal interior minister of Germany, not only applauded the police action, but she described the event, the conference, as an Islamist conference. What do you think of that characterization of the Palestine Congress?
Isn't it remarkably farcical that our Jewish comrades who helped us co-organize, put together this Congress, have been dismissed as Islamists? Let me be clear. There were no Islamists in this. And in any case, the reason why our Congress has been so, let's say, unpopular with the German political system is because the German political spectrum, and this is not just the government, this is also the opposition, including some members of the left, I say with deep regret, some of my former comrades, they insist on equating acts of terror, atrocities against civilians, which every soundly thinking person in the world should condemn, and I condemn, of course, and so do all the organizers of this Congress, equating, however, violence against civilians with a principled resistance to an apartheid state, which is part of a project of systematically, ethnically cleansing the population of the Palestinians. That is what they do not want. They do not want a Congress like ours, especially one that includes progressive Jews. That is the main thing that they detested, that they were Jewish demonstrators, Jewish activists, Jewish intellectuals, Jewish speakers with us, with one voice saying one thing alone: equal political rights, civil liberties, from the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea. I'm neither a Jew nor a Palestinian. I don't have a view as to how this will be accomplished. But I think every single human person on this planet has an obligation, not a right, an obligation to demand from the river to the sea equal political rights. And the German political establishment does not want to listen to this. They simply want to associate anyone who opposes Netanyahu's government or any government in Israel that perpetrates genocide, essentially, to be associated, to be stigmatized as an anti-Semite, which, by the way, it is the anti-Semite's greatest dream come true.
Now, Germany has also banned the display of the Palestinian flag. How do you think the suppression of pro-Palestinian protests in Germany, has that spread to other countries in Europe? What's your sense of what's going on throughout the rest of the continent?
Not formally. The Palestinian flag has not been banned formally, but I can tell you that even here in Greece, anyone who is sporting the colors of Palestine walking on the street seriously risks being assaulted by ultra-rightists, being arrested, apprehended by police for some pretext. The bourgeois liberal democratic rights and principles have all been sacrificed on the altar of enabling Israel to complete the genocide which is carrying out. It is carrying out not just in Gaza, but as we heard before in the news bulletin, in East Jerusalem and in the West Bank. In the same way that in the 1930s, we all had an obligation, a duty, an ethical commitment, or should have had one, to support Jews and to show our solidarity to the Jewish people who were suffering from the Nazi regime, from the Croat Nazi regime, from the Greek fascists and so on. We have a duty today to end the genocide in ancient Palestine.
Yanis Varoufakis, as a former finance minister, a vocal critic of austerity, how do you perceive Germany's position on the war on Gaza in light of its significant arms sales to Israel? I mean, you have Nicaragua taking Germany to the International Court of Justice, saying that by providing weapons for Israel to carry out this war, that it's engaging in crimes against humanity or war crimes.
Well, Amy, it's interesting and I think not coincidental that on the Monday before the invasion, the incursion by the German police into our Palestinian Congress in the venue in Berlin, I happened to be in Milan, in Italy, in Milan, and I was giving a speech to a gathering of hundreds of financial analysts at the top, the creme de la creme of European financial experts. And in it, unbeknownst to me of what was going to happen later on that week, I outlined dire prognostications about the long-term damage inflicted upon Germany and Germany's social economy by decades of austerity, combined with impressive largesse for finances, what you call in the United States quantitative easing. And, you know, I was really surprised because here I am, a lefty, addressing a gathering of hundreds of financial experts. Those hard-nosed financiers actually applauded me, and afterwards they came to me and they said that they agree with what I was saying. And I have to tell you that when that happens, I get really worried. Because if these hard-nosed financiers, many of them German, came to me and they said that they agreed with my prognosis that the German business model is kaput, is in dire straits, I start feeling very uncomfortable. So I think there is a connection. Because here you have a political system in Germany which understands in its bones that the economic dominance that the German industrial model had within the European Union for so many decades is now waning. And when such a regime feels threatened, feels that its economic prowess and authority and dominance is waning, it's really very easy for that to translate itself into movements that essentially fan the flames of increasing and increasingly farcical authoritarianism.
I also want to ask you, Yanis Varoufakis, about Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks. The Wall Street Journal is reporting now that the government of Australia asked the U.S. last week if it could reach a felony plea deal with Assange that could result in his return home. I think also today is the deadline for the U.S. government to answer questions that the British judges had, guaranteeing that he would not be given the death penalty if found guilty, and questioning what kind of free speech rights he would have.
Amy, before I answer your question, full disclosure, I am a very close friend of Julian Assange, and I have been part of the campaign to release him. His only crime is journalism. And because of that reality, I mean, think about it. What he has done is just straightforward journalistic work, which the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, the Spiegel used in order to reveal to the people of the United States, to the people of Germany, to the people of Britain and so on, about the crimes that our governments have perpetrated behind our backs in our name. That, yeah, his crime was journalism. The Australian government, this governed by Prime Minister Albanese, initially, after his election, claimed that he was demanding from the United States that the United States, and in particular Joe Biden, drop the charges and drop the request to the British authorities for Julian Assange's extradition. Clearly, they were not heard. And now they are talking about a plea bargain? I can tell you, Julian is never going, even if his life depends on it, and his life does depend on it, is never going to plead guilty as if journalism is a crime. It is despicable that the government of Australia, given that Julian Assange is an Australian citizen, should be diminishing its own reputation by begging for a plea deal that essentially gives the United States authorities and the national security apparatus what they want. And that is a conviction for Julian. They cannot stand that Julian Assange has never been convicted of a crime. They want him to be convicted of a crime which they can then portray as a violation of American law, of America's statutes and so on. He's never violated any law, except that he has been a pain in the neck for those who were committing crimes in the name of the American people behind their backs.
And Yanis Varoufakis, we only have a few minutes left, but I did want to take the opportunity to ask you about your most recent book, Techno-Feudalism, What Killed Capitalism. I'm wondering if you could lay out some of the amazing arguments that you make, especially about the new feudal lords and the rest of us becoming serfs of techno-feudalism.
Thank you for the question. Look, the moment you enter Amazon.com, you've exited capitalism. It looks like capitalism, but it isn't. There are thousands of buyers and sellers, but we are all, whether we are buying or selling on Amazon.com, we are all the serfs of Jeff Bezos. He doesn't produce anything. He simply has encased us in that digital fiefdom, I call it the cloud fiefdom, using very powerful algorithmic capital, which I also call cloud capital. And every time you buy anything, from a book to an electric bicycle on Amazon.com, which he's not produced, he charges up to 40% to the vassal capital that has produced it. So markets have been replaced by these digital thieves, and profit has increasingly been siphoned off into what is essentially a kind of rent, like the feudal lords of yesteryear used to charge rent or extract rents from the serfs. My view is that this is what already has happened. In other words, capitalism was killed by capital, not by us of the left, not by trades unions. Capital became so triumphant that, like a stupid virus, it mutated into a very toxic version which killed its host, capitalism. That's the basic premise of my book, with repercussions going as far as explaining the new Cold War between the United States and China, because, let's face it, the United States and China are the two places, countries, economic blocks that contain a lot of this cloud capital. Europe doesn't have it. The rest of the world doesn't have it.
You write that techno-feudalism enslaves our minds. It rewrites the rules of global